Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Well, you know, the biggest challenge out there that everybody knows about is the situation in Ukraine with the Russian invasion. And, you know, we're just very sympathetic and empathetic to the Ukrainian people and want to see this invasion stop immediately.
Outlining one of the top challenges right now to trade globally, Ryan LeGrand, CEO, U.S. Grains Council.
But it's really causing problems for their grain supply and their upcoming grain planting. Most of their wheat is winter wheat, so that's in the ground. But they're going to have to make some decisions very soon on corn planting, and they supply 14% of the world's corn. And it's going to be a very, very difficult job to get into the fields, get the inputs they need, and get into the fields and get those acres planted.
This is Agriculture Today.
Our interest is to try to fill the program up to hit that acreage cap, and we'll see what comes in. We can do that through, you know, we'll see what we can do through the general sign-up. We added additional incentives last year to encourage more producers to come in.
Robert Bonney is USDA's Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation.
But there are also other opportunities to both the CRP grasslands. We'll be out later this spring with a sign up there, and we think there'll be some interest there. That's obviously a working lands program. People can continue to graze. And then we'll look for ways through continuous enrollments, CREP programs, and those sorts of things where we can get the environmentally sensitive other acres into the program. So, you know, it's a vitally important program. It takes a lot of lands, many of which maybe shouldn't have been in production, and puts them in a conservation use. And, you know, we'll do what we can to make sure it's fully subscribed.
Speaking at Commodity Classic about the drought in the West.
Yeah, drought. I mean, in the context of CRP, it matters because it creates an opportunity for some producers and landowners that maybe have been impacted by drought. But beyond that, drought is critical. We're seeing longer droughts. We've talked a lot here at the Commodity Classic about sort of the climate change mitigation side. How do we reduce greenhouse gas emissions? But resilience in the face of drought, extreme weather, wildfire, all those things are critically important as well. And one thing we need to make sure at USDA is that we've got the tools in the toolbox, whether it's drought or other things, to be able to help agriculture. And I suspect this is going to be an important conversation as we go into the 23 Farm Bill.
Recently, Bonney met with members of the House Ag Committee.
Yeah, I thought it was a good conversation. There are questions on the climate side. I don't need to tell you, climate change has been controversial in rural and in agriculture before. You know, there's a really constructive conversation. Ag is at the table. It's got its sleeves rolled up and figuring out how can we build policies that will work for agriculture and the climate at the same time. Some of that, you know, those constructive questions came through in that hearing. There were other questions about our ability to move on some disaster dollars, some questions looking towards the 23 Farm Bill, and then also questions around, you know, the questions you were asking early on about staffing and our ability to get folks back out in the offices to think about other things we can do to make it easier for producers to enroll in programs. And so those administrative side of what we do, not quite as sexy but important. And so anytime you go to a hearing like that, you hear about those things too.
For disaster assistance, there was the WIP program, then WIP Plus. What's next?
We're obviously trying to move on some disaster dollars right now, building on WIP and WIP Plus, and we're working quickly to on the livestock side. We'll be out this month with the phase one of moving those dollars, with cropland soon to follow, and then we'll, for those producers we can't get to, we'll come with phase two, both on the livestock and the crop side. Looking to the future, you know, part of the core of our safety net is crop insurance. That continues to be really important. We'll look for ways. Are there things we can do there to enhance who gets it policies so that we can do a better job of providing that tool? Nice thing about crop insurance is that payments happen pretty quickly, and that's really attractive. But there's going to be a conversation about what level of ad hoc disaster going forward in the context of the 23 Farm Bill. Expect that. And you know, part of our design of the disaster dollars we're moving now is to encourage people. We're using data from NAP. We're using data from RMA. We're using data from those livestock programs. Part of it is to encourage people to go there first, to get in those programs, and then we'll fill the gaps. So I still think our core safety net programs are really, really important, and there's going to be an ongoing conversation about what role ad hoc disaster payments play.
It's Agriculture Today.
Like West Texas weather, times can change in an instant, but one thing remains the same. Agriculture will continue to be an indispensable part of our daily lives. South Plains Implement has been your deeply rooted and stable provider of John Deere equipment, parts, and service throughout West Texas and New Mexico for the past 40 years, and we aren't going anywhere. To become a member of our team, visit our careers page, southplainsimplement.com. South Plains Implement, where farm meets family.
One of the directors of feedlot operations here at Freona Industries, it's important for us to be partner with people that understand the business and understand the challenges we face. And as we've grown from 4 to 6 to 8 yards, Capital Farm Credit has been there every step of the way. They understand the agriculture industry, understand the ebbs and flows, the trends, the economics, but more importantly, understand the cattle feeding sector and have been extremely good partners for us to work with. And hopefully that partnership gets to solidify even more.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We look back in terms of the track record that U.S. Cotton has. The chart you see here reflects data for the last 35 years. This is work put together by Field to Market, the Alliance for Sustainable Agriculture, that has evaluated the resource efficiency of U.S. cotton from 1980. And this reflects data from 1980 through 2015.
Dr. Gary Adams, President, CEO, National Cotton Council.
And does show that over the course of time, we have been more efficient. We've increased our land use efficiency. U.S. cotton's reduced soil loss, become more efficient with the use of irrigation water, more efficient with energy, and also reducing greenhouse gas emissions. So we as an industry looked at the track record that had been established. But in order to continue to drive forward on continuous improvement, we wanted to also then establish goals for how we might see continued improvement within these environmental metrics. So in 2017, industry associations came together, both National Cotton Council, along with working with Cotton Incorporated, Cotton Council International, and the Cotton Board, to establish sustainability goals for the year 2025. So again, focus on 6 key environmental metrics and build off of the historical data that we had that went from 1980 through 2015, and then be able to hopefully drive continuous improvement and continue to, you know, increase our soil carbon index by 30%, have a goal of a 13% increase in land use efficiency, decrease greenhouse gas emissions by 39%, water use by 18%, energy use by 15%, and then soil loss by 50%. And all of these would be measured per unit of production or per pound of production. So our first step in this process of the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol was to establish the sustainability goals.
Talks about being intentional.
We felt like as an intentional effort to help us reach those goals was to create a program that we refer to as the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol. So a sustainability initiative within the industry that could help us engage producers and then drive continuous improvement. So it was not only about trying to reach our goals as an industry, but it was also an effort to meet the needs of the brands and the retailers. We know that the textile supply chain has been under increasing scrutiny in terms of where they source their raw materials. And as we talked to those brands and retailers in that textile supply chain, you know, that was the message received back, is that, you know, how could U.S. cotton do a better job of demonstrating the improvement they're making and convey that sustainability message and also convey the environmental data. So again, as we look to preserve and not only preserve, but grow the demand for U.S. cotton, we saw this as an important program that could provide to the brands and retailers the information they needed.
And adds third party verification.
So there is what we refer to as second and third party verification. On the third party verification, we use a organization called Control Union. They will provide field visits to a random sample of the producers. So they're visiting their farm, they're asking questions, they're really trying to make sure that producers are doing those practices on their farm that they identified when they completed the self-assessment, that they've also completed the field print analysis. So again, it when we talk about the independent verification, it really does give us credibility as a program, and it gives the brands and retailers the assurances they need to confidently source U.S. cotton.
It's Agriculture Today.
Every drop counts. Introducing the Patriot 50 Series Sprayer from Case IH that puts every drop of product exactly where you want it. Enhanced LED lights, a cab designed for all-day comfort, and more precise spraying technology. Because just like you, we know every drop counts. Visit your local Wiley implement for details on the new Patriot 50 Series Sprayer.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
When your field calls for the perfect type of tough, go all in on FiberMax Cotton to deliver the right seed for whatever you're up against. Like the FiberMax 2398 GLTP variety. Strong as an ox, fights like a bull. Built to buck stress, boost yield quality, and stand strong when that verticillium wilt comes creeping. Whether you're looking for that type of tough or another, you can find it at FiberMax.com. FiberMax Cotton Seed from BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
So I spent 10 years in Washington, D.C. When I left college, I never really intended on coming back to the farm. I had a great career in D.C., but I was doing ag policy, and I was working with farmers the entire time. And slowly but surely, I started getting a little bite to go back to the farm.
Russell Williams is a diversified producer from the Texas Panhandle, from Commodity Classic in New Orleans.
But you know, I think spending that 10 years, even where I am today, I wouldn't change that for anything. It really put me into the policy mindset, because a lot of what we do depends on environmental regulations, depends on knowledge about the Farm Bill and farm programs. And so, having that knowledge, bringing that back to the farm, I think I've been able to add value to our operation.
Williams is a delegate for Corn Congress.
Corn Congress is the culmination of a grassroots effort by all the corn producing states to develop policy that then our teams in D.C. will go and lobby the federal government on. And so it's, you may have a policy that impacts Texas, and so we'll develop that from the grassroots, pass that at our own meetings in Texas. We'll bring that up to Corn Congress. And, we'll advocate for those policies. But it's a way for states to get together, look at our national policy together, and find out what direction we want to go into, find out, places that maybe our policy is outdated or needs updating, and then look at new issues and how can we manage those, in a way that allows, not only flexibility, but does provide direction to the people who represent national corn growers in Washington, D.C.
So how do ag groups really help farmers?
As an organization, we're the ones that are extremely passionate about that. And I would tell anybody who looks at, from the outside, who hasn't been involved, whether it's Farm Bureau or whether it's any of the other commodity organizations, their state corn group or National Corn Growers Association, that, there's a place where people are doing a lot of heavy lifting for policies that are going to impact you whether you're involved or not. And so, what I would tell people who are skeptical about, either the money going to these organizations or being involved generally, is like, oh, I don't have the time, is that somebody's going to tell your story, and whether you want it, to be yourself or like-minded individuals telling your story, or, whether it's some other group that may not have your best interests at heart, somebody's going to tell that story to policymakers in Washington, D.C. And it's extremely important that your voice is heard, that you're part of an organization, that has the ability and the reach to contact these lawmakers and to make this policy, impactful for them and their operations.
And how about the work of lobbyists?
So I'll give you an example from my days on Capitol Hill. A group would come in and they would say they spoke for the industry, and you would get one side, one viewpoint, and then you might take another meeting with another group that comes in and say, we speak for the industry, and that position is the exact opposite. And so, again, it goes back to making sure that you know what your story is, and making sure that you know that that story is being told correctly to people who are making decisions. It's extremely difficult to, as farmers, we want to concentrate on the land. We want to concentrate on growing a really good crop, being great stewards of our land, and we get caught up in that sometimes. But we forget that there's a whole other part that farmers rely on extremely heavily, whether it's environmental regulations, whether it's the Farm Bill, whatever. Those issues are just as important, or in some cases even more important than making a nitrogen decision on your farm. Like, you could get an environmental policy that comes in and says, well, you can't do that anymore, and how does that impact you? And had you maybe been in that congressman or that senator's office telling a staffer about how this impacts them, that may have been able to turn the tide.
It's Agriculture Today. If you don't push yourself, how will you know what you're really made of? Cotton Research and Promotion Program works to develop innovative performance technologies that redefine cotton's capabilities and helps athletes push themselves further. Cotton Incorporated is working hard to educate consumers about cotton's versatility, especially in the athletic apparel market. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
For years, cotton growers have had a trusted partner when it comes to choosing their varieties. NextGen brand cottonseed from America. You can depend on NextGen varieties for performance and yields year after year. And for this year's season, there are several new Bollgard 3 Extend Flex varieties available. Oh, and one other thing. Americot is now offering Cotless seed treatments to protect your seed investment against your early season challenges. To find out more, contact your local NextGen representative or seed dealer today. Americot. All we do is cotton. All the time.
This is Agriculture Today.
Well, there's been plenty of supply chain disruptions recently and during the pandemic, especially with the containers, the availability of containers to ship goods out of the country, and the price of that container to ship it over to Asia with our grain and feed goods.
Ryan LeGrand is CEO of the U.S. Grains Council.
It's been just a major, major challenge. And now you've got oil, you know, touching 120 a barrel. I think we're a little bit off those highs right now, but it's just screaming high, and that's obviously causing the freight of whatever you haul, however you haul it, in a truck or a barge or rail or a vessel, it's going to be more expensive. And it's really gonna put a pinch on things when you look at you're an end user looking to buy something, and it's just going up and up and up every day. It's a difficult situation.
One good trading partner in the past has been Mexico. What about today?
They've been a great market. They've been our number one corn market for years. China took their place last year when they imported more than any other single country had imported, at about 21 million tons. But Mexico's always there. They've always been there, and they've been the steady importer. But we do have a couple of issues out there with this biotech decree, where they're looking to ban the importation of biotech corn for human consumption. And then they're looking to ban glyphosate as well. And both of these have a date on them of January of 2024. So there's a clock that's ticking. And, you know, we need to work as hard as we can to help Mexico to see that this is not in their best interest. They have one of the leading livestock production sectors in the world. And, what you know, if they all of a sudden ban the import of corn for feeding of those animals, they're going to be in a real tough spot. And I just don't think that everything's being considered right now as to what the ramifications would be of banning biotech and glyphosate. If they ban glyphosate, they're going to cut their own yields by 20 to 30%. And then they're going to become more dependent on the import of grains than they are now. So just a tough situation we need to work through.
What about the livestock industry in Mexico?
Jalisco is that state where Guadalajara is, and that's the major animal production center of Mexico. A lot of poultry, a lot of pork production in that area. There's some beef and dairy, but that's kind of centered in other areas. But yeah, they're suffering right now.
There's also been some ethanol issues which continue in Mexico.
They have a new president there that has really not allowed the ethanol agenda to progress. He has an agenda where he is trying to save the state-owned oil company Pemex. He's trying to bring them back to life, so to speak, and really bolster that state-owned oil company. And ethanol just doesn't seem to be part of that equation for him right now. Under the previous administration, we were able to work and get E10 approved, but that was quickly overturned in the courts, and it's since then it's been sitting on the government's desk, waiting on a kind of a renewal of the regulation, a way to work it to where it wouldn't face so many legal challenges, and they just haven't done that.
So why is the U.S. Grains Council vital for U.S. farmers?
We work to knock down barriers. And while this is a tough one in Mexico, we've had a lot of successes in other areas of bringing down tariffs, of working to bring down non-tariff barriers. And that is the space where we operate. Policy overseas, working to help governments, foreign governments, see the benefits of importing U.S. grain and U.S. fuel in the form of ethanol.
Ryan LeGrand, CEO, U.S. Grains Council. This is Agriculture Today.
What can you get for 2 cents these days? How about new, more efficient wheat varieties? Better market access for Texas wheat producers and increased demand to your product. Each year, the Texas Wheat Producers Board achieves these goals by investing producer contributions to promote wheat through research, education, and market development. Who knew 2 cents could be so valuable? A message from the Texas Wheat Producers Board.
On the phone with Joe Guzman, National Sales Manager with Equinom Smarter Sesame. Joe, planting season right around the corner.
Sure, Stephen. As the year begins drier than we expected, keep in mind that sesame is very drought hardy and has a low cost to raise. Our grain handlers are buying Equinom Smarter Sesame in the range of $22 to $24 a bushel, which competes well with other crops in our area. Also, sesame can be an insurable crop in most areas. It should be added to your policy by the 15th of March.
Joe, if somebody wants more information.
Sure, they can reach me at 1-833-SESAME. Or Equinom.com.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I have a real concern about overbuilding and the relationship between USDA and FCC. So,
Representative Kat Kamick from Florida is a member of the House Ag Committee.
If you look at the FCC's current definition of unserved, that's an area that is lacking speeds of 25 over 3 megabits per second. Now, the definition also describes communities throughout my own district where even minimal broadband service is unavailable, leaving entire communities behind. Secretary Vilsack recently announced that USDA would fund projects capable of serving 100 over 20 megabits, including areas that were already receiving funds from the FCC's Rural Digital Opportunity Fund, the RDOF auction, to serve areas at speeds of 25 over 3. Now, I'm concerned that we have multiple providers in the same area that are going to use federally subsidized overbuilding to deploy broadband, which really doesn't make economical sense. It's not good use of taxpayer funds. So how are we going to prevent overbuilding in these areas while still leaving areas that aren't touched by the RDOF auctions and by the Reconnect program? How are we going to address this?
Representative Kamick was addressing the Undersecretary for Rural Development at USDA, Soshi Torres-Small.
It is a priority of USDA Rural Development to make sure that we are reaching those unserved communities. We have the same definition of 25 up, 3 down as unserved, making sure that we're reaching your constituents. And that's why in the priority points that we've identified, 50 points out of 150 are specifically for that unserved population of 25 up, 3 down. Additionally, if they're in a very undense population, if they're really rural, that's another set of priority points. So we know how crucial it is to be able to prioritize those projects, and we know how crucial it is to make sure that rural communities aren't stuck in the slow lane for the rest of time, right? This is an investment not just for now, but also into the future. So making sure that we have a backbone that will be able to compete on the speeds that we see is crucial. Because we certainly saw in the midst of COVID with your kids who are sitting in the Hardee's parking lot that 25 up, 3 down isn't enough for them to be able to listen to their teacher and learn from home. And so we want to make sure we're building out to where it is enough for them to compete on the global marketplace.
So in the time I have remaining, I just want to do a quick follow-up on that. So under the RDOF, and I know that this is more the FCC side, it prohibits these entities, these census tracts, these municipalities, once they have been auctioned off to participate in other programs, but so many of these areas would fall or qualify for USDA. Are there conversations ongoing with FCC and your office about how we can navigate this? Because under that FCC guidance, there's 10 years to deploy the service. We can't afford to wait 10 years.
So there absolutely are conversations ongoing about how we coordinate between RDOF and Reconnect programs. We are considering projects at a very granular level. What does this look like on the ground? Mm-hmm. And that's something that in this round we started to do, so that we're looking very specifically at how an application would impact current RDOF places, and making sure that we recognize building out is going to take construction time and beyond, and making sure that whatever decisions we make, they are in coordination across the federal government.
Torres-Small, also a former member of the House Ag Committee. It's Agriculture Today.
Aqua Yield regional agronomist Dr. Tracy Carrillo talks about using NanoPro to improve your burn down.
NanoPro is a nanoliquid technology that grabs the molecules of your burn down herbicides. It enhances the delivery of your herbicides, making them more efficient. You oftentimes see a 3-to-1 return on investment. This will stretch your chemical use up to 30%, which means you're saving more money, especially with the availability and volatility of chemicals these days.
Find out more at aquayield.com.
When your field calls for the perfect type of tough, go all in on FiberMax Cotton to deliver the right seed for whatever you're up against. Like the FiberMax 1621 GL variety. Strong as an ox, fights like a bull. Built to buck stress, boost yield quality, and muscle up when bacterial blight throws down. Whether you're looking for that type of tough or another, you can find it at FiberMax.com. FiberMax Cotton Seed from BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
You do have to look and know what you've got and what you can afford to do.
Wesley Spurlock is a Texas Panhandle producer.
When anhydrous prices in the $1,400 range and maybe higher in the Texas Panhandle, or our liquid fertilizers and phosphoruses and nitrogens, everything is just so three times higher than probably last year, and some's a little higher than that. So you've really got to watch and know what you're at, and what your history of the fields is about as important as anything. And our farm, we've been using, putting out 10 to 15 tons of manure for several years on different farms, and we'll do it a couple of years, and then we wait 3 or 4 and do it again. And we've built up our fertilizers. And so for us looking at it, we're looking at making sure we continue to do our soil sample analysis that we have done every year, where we, in crop, we do 2 soil samples and then 3 tissue samples. And our liquid fertilizer we put on from there. But it may be the year that you kind of mine some of what you've put down in years past and hope your soils are strong enough to do it and get you yield somewhere close, but still be in a profitable position.
Agrees, it's a really dry year.
We remember coming out of 2010 with this great year, and we had on our farm, we had close to 30 inches of rainfall. Early September, it kind of quit raining and thought, oh, that's going to make for great harvest, or if it doesn't rain too much, we'll be able to get harvest without mud. Well, we didn't realize it wasn't going to rain for 3 years. And so we went into this drought, and we come out of it doing great, but this has happened again. It was September when our last measurable precipitation was. And I was on a conference call about a week and a half ago, and it's with Burlington Northern Santa Fe's Ag Rail Council. And there's farmers from Montana, the Dakotas, Nebraska, Kansas, Texas. I'm the Texas deal. It's got representatives from National Wheat Growers Association, National Grain Sorghum, National Corn, and American Soybean. So it's got all these different people, and from Montana all the way to through the middle of Texas is dry. I was amazed to just hear each one of them talk about it and where it was at. And so our entire High Plains area is in a drought, and that's a tough one because we know we've got to have rain, even with good irrigation water, or laying your best plans to make your irrigation go as far as it can. You still need Mother Nature to help you and get there, or to be profitable and get the yields we need.
But at the end of the day, he's optimistic.
I think our markets are giving us, even though as volatile as they are and they bounce up, and they've got really, all of them have got our corn, wheat, everything, soybeans have got hit $16, corn in the $7 range, and wheat at $12. I mean, these are great prices. If you can go in and hedge these a little bit and price some stuff out, or even a lot of these elevators and grain buyers are purchasing it, so it gives you the ability to lock in some of these good prices that are here, because they don't always stay very long. And so it's a great opportunity to cover some of this more expensive production cost we've got, and hopefully we can get that, and then we can raise a good crop to enjoy and go into the next year with maybe something a little more stable than what we're looking at this time.
It's Agriculture Today.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
When it comes to farming cotton in West Texas, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers rely on Delta Pine brand cotton. Bred, tested, and made in West Texas for West Texas growing conditions. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Well, I think from our standpoint, we want to make the programs we have work as well as they can for producers out there. And one of the great things about being a commodity classic is we hear what's working, what's not, where can we do a better job of serving our customers. And we want to be transparent about that. So, we want to hear from producers. This is a partnership about how we support agriculture, how we support forestry. And so I would encourage folks to, reach out to their FSA offices, reach out to NRCS. This is a partnership, and we've got great folks out in the field, but we can always do better.
Robert Bonney, USDA's Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation.
Part of the great thing about coming to meetings like that is, folks are honest, and they tell you where you can do better, and they also tell you what they think's going well as part of that, too.